Now that's a guitar riff right there. Hi, everybody. It's Phil F. and Wendy Snyder, your guitar riffing station, WGN. Welcome to the Monday edition of our show. Join in, 312-981-7200.
We never did our little tribute to Leonard Cohen on Friday.
No, we didn't.
And now we have Leon Russell, too.
I was just going to say, we lost another musical great.
So we'll do our memorial twofer later on in the morning.
Were you a fan of either or both of theirs?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Although, didn't Leon Russell look like somebody that if, like, I know for a fact, if he and I were ever sat next to each other at, like, a wedding reception, I'd be uncomfortable the whole evening.
Well, that's not a nice thing, because just what he appears, maybe he wasn't like that. I mean, like, Charlie Daniels looks more normal, and he'd be a whack job. You know what I'm saying?
Why do you say that about Charlie Daniels?
Because he's crazy, and I love him. I saw him live in action at the Country Music Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And he was great. He literally flew in to do a song and then went back on his tour.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I do know that people that I admire a lot in the music business, Billy Joel, for one. Billy Joel has talked about Leon Russell forever, and what an amazing influence his music had on him. So I guess I could open with that. Hey, you influenced Billy Joel.
And played on so many songs as part of the Wrecking Crew and a session musician.
Sure.
I learned this morning while Dean was talking to our own Steve Cochran that Leon Russell played on the Ronettes song.
Did he? I didn't know that at all.
Didn't he have a late relationship with Elton John, too?
Musical relationship?
Yeah,
maybe.
Weren't they touring together?
Were they?
Was it Elton John? I thought it was someone.
Could be.
Well, I'm, you know, in trouble because my son Michael is 17 and Leon Russell was playing at the Arcata Theater and I didn't. He's like, you didn't want to take me there.
Oh.
I said, get your license and you can take yourself there.
True story.
I know.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's inspiration for him to finally get his driver's license. And now he'll never have the chance to see him.
And would you agree with me that Leonard Cohen's celebrity was an unlikely one? He doesn't seem the kind of guy that would have... I mean, he's incredibly talented, but it's just a very strange story.
Well, he wrote a bunch of songs for people, great poet, but his song Hallelujah, which is... I want that at my funeral. I do not want you to sing it.
I'm going to sing it.
No, God, please.
I'm going to sing it. I've already decided.
Funeral canceled.
And now Bill left.
I'm going to do that and then...
with a remembrance.
A medley of Cyndi Lauper hits.
You know what? I would love that.
It's going to be big.
Which is why he's dressed like that.
He's so unusual. But Hallelujah, was it Jeff Buckley who got really the hit for it?
Yeah.
And... it's a beautiful song, and I didn't really understand Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton singing that on SNL.
Oh, I did.
I thought that was huge.
You did?
I did.
Yeah.
It was so moving.
Because it was like her way of trying to heal.
I guess.
Oh, I thought that was
was really
such
good.
A strong start that on
did
Saturday.
Did you really? I just had mixed emotions on the whole SNL this week.
For people who didn't see it, the very the open of the show was Kate McKinnon as Hillary Clinton just behind a piano singing Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah with no jokes involved.
No,
just
that's
that.
I guess what threw me.
Well, I think it was their way of saying, even though we got to where we are by parroting a situation, this one is almost too much, you know, that the only thing we can do is be reverent and just kind of address it this way. I thought that was a very nice statement.
And she turned to the camera when she was done and she said, I haven't given up and you shouldn't
either. It was very strong. I like that.
It didn't do much
it didn't
for
do
me,
anything
sorry.
For it.
I mean, it's a good thing it wasn't Leon Russell, because if she'd sung like Tightrope or something, it wouldn't have worked.
True.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah, that would have been interesting. And then, if I may, there's another celebrity death that occurred over the weekend.
I know who it
was. And this one hit me hard. Robert
Vaughn. I
thought
of you, yes. Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Known primarily for Man from U.N.C.L.E., but he was in everything from The Magnificent Seven to The Towering Inferno. He was
Can
a
I
very
say
bad
suave?
Man. He really was.
Absolutely.
You know who he reminded me of is, and this is a guy who died earlier this year, is Rod Taylor, the guy who was in The Time Machine, a bunch of other movies. There was that word suave kind of perfectly embodied them. Just
kind,
really
kind of
cool.
The antithesis of you.
The exact antithesis of me, yeah. And yet, I always admired his work anytime I saw him in anything. You know, he was just kind of a subtle, suave guy
and
played
that
role so well.
Where's Ilya Koryakin?
Where is he? David McCallum? Where is he?
Is he still with us?
He's still with us.
I know. Listen, I know that we're not young spring chickens anymore. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know 2016 is turning out to be a really crappy year in deaths like 2015 was.
The worst.
It's going to keep going. I hate to tell you all.
The death thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was having this conversation with my son, Michael. He's 17, and he's really into music. So these musicians are starting with David Bowie at the beginning of the year really has bothered him.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I have not lost anyone close to me yet. And
in real life,
yes.
not people that he admires.
So he's kind of freaking out about death a little bit. And I said, well, you know, it's going to happen to all of us. And be thankful that it hasn't happened to you yet, because you have more time with these people.
Right.
My dad died when I was 10. My mom, your mom. It's like, it's never a good time.
Right.
But it happens.
Steve?
Yeah, Bowie's the one that I still pause when I think of it.
Because it just doesn't make sense to you?
I just have a hard time grasping it that, yeah, he's dead.
What it gets me is whenever, and you see this mostly at award shows, but there's plenty of sites online, people we've lost this year, and it's just, it's a barrage.
Yeah.
It's not like there's always a trickle, but this year it's like, wait a minute, all those people in one year, all those notable people?
Ain't no trickle anymore, Bill. The floodgates have opened.
It's not.
Think about how these celebrities, I mean, when Abe Vigoda died, that was it.
That was the beginning of the end?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's everyone's getting up there in age, and it's like I still think I'm 20 years old and these people are still in their 30s or 40s.
Right.
No.
That's what the thing that gets me as much as all the celebrities that have died, all the people that have died, is when you see somebody, for instance, Warren Beatty has a movie that's coming out that looks really good. So I'm reading about Warren Beatty and about this movie that he stars in and he's directed. And it says Warren Beatty, and then in brackets, 82.
I know.
Says that this movie, and I go, well, Warren Beatty's not 82. That's a misprint. You can't tell people Warren Beatty's 82, except that he is. That's the part that you go, that's not fair. How did Warren Beatty happen to become 82? And I know how it happened. I looked it up on the internet. Every year you add another number, so it gets up to 82. But you go, well, Warren Beatty's just that cool guy from Shampoo. He's like 35, right? He's not 82.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
How come we stay 20 in our own minds?
Yeah, I know.
I don't really understand it, but it's...
It's got to be more hard for somebody to swallow when they are the Warren Beatty in this equation. And you go, hey, it says in the paper I'm 82. But I am 80. That's when it sets in.
But then you look at all the people who live to 100 plus now.
Yeah.
It's like 80 is the new 60. It really is.
Yeah, but did you want to be the old 60?
No.
I don't know.
Nope.
Oh, no.
Absolutely. Back in the day when 60 was 60?
You're a wise sage. You know that, Bertrand? You really
all
are.
All sages are wise.
But yeah, we forgot to do our Leonard Cohen and now Leon Russell.
And Robert Vaughn.
And Robert Vaughn.
Yes. The world is a more dangerous place because he is gone. He protected us when he was in Man from U.N.C.L.E. I had to explain Man from U.N.C.L.E. to one of my daughters because when he died, we were talking about him and she goes, I don't have no idea what Man from U.N.C.L.E. is. So I told her the setup of it. And it seemed like at that time in television, there were a lot of shows like Man from U.N.C.L.E. and I Spy, you know, that kind of feel, you know?
Yeah.
A couple of guys, just rogue guys out saving the world. And I guess that still exists to some extent
today.
It Takes a Thief.
Oh,
it was a good example.
Robert Wagner, he was
so
good.
But there was like a wink and a nod to the shows.
Yeah, in all of them. In almost all of them. All right, let's do this.
Wait, I got to ask you if you know what UNCLE stands for.
Oh,
my God, we have stumped Bill Leff.
I know the bad guys were Thrush in that, right?
No, Chaos was Adam
Get Smart.
Get Smart.
Right.
I
think it was Thrush.
I just wanted to know if you knew what UNCLE was, and I'm kind of surprised
you United know. Nations.
Keep going.
Right so far? Crime? United Nations crime, I don't know.
Oh, we'll find it.
All right.
United Network Command for Law and Enforcement.
Okay. I just remember their boss was played by a guy named Leo G. Carroll, and he scared me. Like, when I was a kid, I would watch Man from U.N.C.L.E. with my parents, but he, their boss, scared. There was something about him. I can't put my finger on it, but he just seemed, even though he was a good guy on the show, he would frighten me as a child.
A little menacing?
Yeah. He had a scary look to
him. I remember
that. That was too much for me as a child. I wanted him to get fired. Like, I'd go, I want those guys to keep doing what they do, but their boss is too scary. He should be fired for being so frightening. I know. Right. It's ridiculous, but as a kid.
Oh, wait. Addendum. Hi, Roseanne.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know David McCallum is alive and well. He stars on NCIS every Tuesday night. And he is also in his 80s. I think he's
David McCallum is on NCIS?
Did you say he was dead?
I didn't hear you say that.
Oh, okay.
No.
I knew he was alive.
Alive and well.
Wow. All right. I'll find him.
Yep. Every Tuesday night, 7
all right.
o'clock.
I'm there.
Thanks, Roseanne.
All right. We'll take a... Well, that's good news. We needed some good. There we have good news.
There it is.
All right. A little bit more. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Well, we were talking about Robert Vaughn's death and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and It Takes a Thief and all these shows.
Very bad man in Towering Inferno. Did you see Towering Inferno?
Of course I did.
When everybody was trying to get to safety, he pushed his way through the line to get past women.
That's what you would do.
I wouldn't have done it as suave as he did it. I might have done it, but it would have been clumsy.
And it's a joke. Sometimes people take us.
Yeah, I would never do that in a Towering
You'd
Inferno
use me
situation.
As a human shield.
I would do that. I have done that.
Yes, you have. That's why I say it. Dolores is on the line because it's all coming full circle. Hi, Dolores.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just love your show. I usually schedule all my doctor appointments after your
Oh, that's so nice of you.
Why not
you.
During? You can listen in the office. It will help
make
you laugh.
No, not at my age. They don't do those things. Listen, Robert Wagner has a recurring role on NCIS. He plays the father, a very suave, debonair, worldly man.
Really?
The father of Michael Weatherly, who played Dinozzo.
Oh, yeah.
And this year, this season, Dinozzo is not in it anymore. He's gone to Paris for a whole different line. I'm not going with that story for you anyway.
All right.
Anyhow, he's supposed to be coming. It's a recurring role as his father occasionally. Well, he's going to be on tomorrow night. NCIS at 7 o'clock on CBS.
I'd like to see
and
Robert
Ilya
Wagner.
And Ilya Kuryakin is on that as well?
Ilya Kuryakin, yes.
David McCallum.
He's Ducky. They call him, his name on the show, they call him Ducky. His real name is the name of a breed of waterfowl, so they call him Ducky.
Oh.
And he's a coroner, and he cuts the bodies apart to find out what causes the death. It's a very interesting role for him, and he is as sharp as a tack. He's just as good, a little older, wiser.
Yeah. That's
but
excellent.
A lot. That show has so much going for it.
The NCIS
I love it.
Show. Yeah. Well, Dolores, thank you. You know, by the way, speaking of Robert Wagner, do you know who Robert Wagner had a huge crush on for a while?
Not Stephanie Powers. Not Stephanie. Who?
That would be Wendy.
He didn't have a crush on me.
He had a crush on you.
We interviewed him, and he was just being his usual charming self.
Yes. They said when he first made an appearance on NCIS, the cast was interviewed on, like, Entertainment Tonight or something like that. Anyhow, they said he is a perfect gentleman to work with. He comes to the set every day with his lines ready to go. Putting some of the others to shame, the regulars.
Wow.
And he was very professional, and they all loved him. He's just a perfect gentleman and a fabulous actor.
That's good news.
Perfect.
Yeah, and he's going to be on tomorrow night.
All right.
Thank you, Dolores.
We'll watch. Thanks,
Hope
Dolores.
Your doctor's appointments are all good today. We appreciate it. And I would just like to, since we've been talking about death and sad things, can we do something nice for someone right now?
I think so, sure.
Just to kind of flip it around. We have a $50 gift card to Tree Time Christmas Creations. I believe they're coming into the studio tomorrow to dress things up. And I'm telling you, if you've never been to Tree Time, you need to go by. It features the most ginormous selection of artificial Christmas trees in various shapes and sizes. They have lights, they have trim, they have wreaths, they have everything you can imagine for Christmas and more at factory direct prices. You can find them online at treetime.com or on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. We have a $50 gift card we will give away right now to lucky caller number 7 at 312-981-7200. Is that good with everyone?
Let's do that. Here's what I remember about Robert Wagner. We had him scheduled for a half an hour interview. He was publicizing a restaurant, a bar that he had opened up in Oak Brook. He took a liking to you, the clubhouse.
I've gone there a lot of times looking for him.
So he was supposed to be in for a half hour. He said to us during the break, we didn't ask, but we liked talking to him. He said, I will stay another half hour. So it was decided he would stay another half hour. We didn't ask him. And then at the end, he just stuck around for a long time. Like after the interview, he stayed.
He liked us.
He just stayed in the studio for a long time.
He liked you. It's funny because there are two people that have done that, and it's Robert Wagner and it's Daryl Hammond from SNL.
Right. They both took a liking to you.
But they just stuck around. They didn't really do anything.
They each had a folder from a class, and they wrote Mr. and Mrs. Wendy Snyder on their folder, and they kept like drawing arrows through it and stuff. I think those guys liked you.
I'd gladly take Robert Wagner. It's Robert Wagner.
I know.
I mean, come on. He was married to the most beautiful woman in the entire world.
Yes.
Natalie Wood.
Yes.
I mean, really, the most amazingly beautiful. I just saw something, too, in like the Enquirer or something that they're about to solve what happened.
That would be nice. I would like that to happen.
It is very mysterious. Christopher Walken, Robert Wagner.
He was on the ship. On a boat.
Yeah. And she drowned and...
And it has gone unsolved. So, yes.
Did we bring that up when we had him on?
No.
That's why he liked you.
Maybe we could book him and talk about that.
I just did my Lionel Stander impression for him for an hour. Oh. You ought to stay longer, Mr. H. I kept doing that. Remember? And despite that, that's how much he liked you, is I kept talking to him like that, and he still stayed. What are you having for lunch, Mr. H? He's like, I'll stay.
Did you co-star in Love Letters with him for a while? Then?
I would have. 6 weeks. In a minute. Was he not just so unbelievably
he was a cool
handsome
man.
And yeah. sweet and charming? And
right.
We'll bring that suave word up again.
That's
it. Oh, those were the days.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Steve has the news. And then, yes, there is more show. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Great job. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And Friday was Veterans Day. I feel really bad that we left without thanking people for their services. I really did.
Yeah.
It kind of came and went. And in honor of Veterans Day, our next guest has such a special title here. There are many of women out there that have welcomed back a spouse after their military duty. And aside from emotional injury, some of these veterans have lost a limb. Some are paralyzed, and some just have a tough readjustment. And on the line with us right now is Barbara McNally. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Wendy. Thank you for having me on.
Sure. Barbara has written a book, Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife, Not Just Surviving, But Thriving. And I have to tell you, we don't have any military members in our family, so I am so unfamiliar with the whole military process. When you start thinking of people coming back from their active duty, it's an adjustment for one thing. I never even really thought of the adjustment for the wives and the families.
Right. Well, think of in your own life, if you've ever had a child that's been hurt, it affects your life too, and you feel their pain, or you might be caring for a parent or your spouse. So we can relate that when somebody we love is wounded, we're wounded too. We feel their pain, and our lives change drastically also. So as civilians, I think we can get a lot out of the book too, because there's so many caregivers out there. And also, you're right, I'm a civilian, but I've worked with military for years, and I've had a support group for the wives of wounded warriors. And hearing their stories inspires me, just the challenges that they've overcome to not only survive but thrive.
And so what, over 5 million caregivers in the United States are caring for wounded veterans. That's an astounding statistic.
Yeah, and just imagine you waited months or years for your husband to return home from a military deployment, and when you finally get the call, it's to tell you he's wounded, and you won't know anything until you see him in the hospital. And these girls are under the age of 30. They're most likely employed. So that means they're working at home and needing to get and work, and they need to give up their careers to go to the hospital and make life-altering decisions for their husbands, like whether or not to keep a limb, whether to keep them on life support. So it's a drastic change for these young women, and their stories are so inspiring. We love stories about heroes, right?
Yeah.
Barbara, I know this is your first book, so what happened to you personally that made you realize this is a story that needed to be told?
Well, actually, it's my second book. My first book was a memoir, and there's a lot of catharsis about writing through our life because we can co-create the life. We can write our stories the way we want to. And after writing my own story, I started a support group for the wives of wounded warriors because they wanted a voice and they wanted to be able to tell their stories. But actually, the impetus for writing this book, I was driving across the Coronado Bridge and I saw a man jump to his death. And I did a little digging and I found out he was a wounded warrior who felt like he had no other options. And I thought of his wife and his mom and his family, and I was working with the Wives of Wounded Warriors. I have a background in physical therapy working with wounded warriors, and I thought, I want to write a book of hope with resources, tools, and stories to help the wife and the mom help her husband and her family heal from the wounds of war.
Now, you have a collection of various women's stories about the adjustments. Were the women very anxious to participate in this book, or were they a little hesitant at first?
Well, surprisingly, I had so many stories, I could have written three books, but I had to limit them down. So I got a broad cross-section so that everybody could relate to one of the stories. So, because healing is so individual, all the injuries are different, but we all heal differently. So, some women felt like, you know, who knows our wounded warriors or our spouses better than the wives, right? So the wife kind of could see which tool and resource might help her husband. For example, the first chapter is about fly fishing because her husband used to fish, and together they found Project Healing Waters, which is throughout United States fly fishing. And that was a way for them to get out of the isolation and kind of recreate their lives. So, yes, all the women really wanted a voice. They really wanted to tell their stories. So that wasn't a problem. Finding it was more limiting and trying to get down to the size of a reasonable book.
Barbara, how does the spouse of somebody who comes over, somebody who has served time and they come back home, how does his or her husband or wife understand how often, if at all, to talk about what happened over there?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, none of them are prepared. None of us are prepared for a tragedy. So what we do, well, in the book, I have a whole chapter on post-traumatic stress and suicide. So I can't answer that simply. Let me think for a minute. What we mostly need to do is be there and help them grieve. And the more the wife understands about post-traumatic stress, the better she is able to help him heal. And the more she understands the signs of suicide, the more she's able to help him heal. So this book, even though it's not a self-help book, it does have a lot of resources for programs out there that help the women. And my signature event is Spa Day, which is Support, Purpose, and Appreciation.
I love the name of that, Barbara, Spa Day.
Thank you. Yes, and I've had that for over 8 years, at least twice a year. And women from all over the United States come. And back to the question about how to ask your husband questions. We have guest speakers to educate the wives about post-traumatic stress, and plus the women just sharing each other's stories, realize they're not alone, and they help each other through that challenge of how do we help our husbands heal, because often they don't want to talk about it, and that's okay. You know, it's important that the women know how to help and how to keep the home as peaceful as possible and less chaotic. So it's a personal growth for the women to learn the skills, because they're not prepared for this tragedy.
Well, that's it. Some of these women, as you mentioned, as their husbands are in the service, they're working to support the family. So they have absolutely no training in this when their wounded husband comes home.
Absolutely. And I was just in Washington, D.C. last week, TV and radio, and I did go to see all the memorials. And one interesting fact is in World War II, for every 7 that were killed, 1 came home injured. Today, for every 1 person that's killed, 7 come home injured. So I learned a lot. I just think that's a fascinating fact that there are so many more wounded coming home now, which is good. We're saving lives. But as a society, I think this book is great to educate all of us on the wounds of war so that we can all help the wounded warriors and their families heal and not leave it all just on the spouse.
And Barbara, when you say they're coming home injured, you're referring to both physical injuries and emotional injuries, aren't you?
Right. And post-traumatic stress is kind of a new word, but used to be called shell shock or soldier's heart. But the difference is people didn't used to live through war, as I just shared that fact from World War II. Now, rarely will somebody die. So people are living through war, and they're coming home with not just physical injuries, but invisible wounds and visible wounds. They're coming home with both, right?
All right. The book is called Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife, Not Just Surviving but Thriving. We're talking to the author, Barbara McNally. We're going to take a quick break here. 312-981-7200 is the number to call if you have any questions or comments for Barbara. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. We're talking to author Barbara McNally about her new book, Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife, Not Just Surviving, But Thriving. Now, this is something, Barbara, that we need to talk about, but have people discussed this so much before your book? I mean, I guess when someone comes home from military service, their life changes in oh so many ways. And now these women are just getting together to help one another get through it. And can you get through it?
Absolutely. And that's why the book's so inspiring. In some cases, life after injury can be transformative in overwhelmingly positive ways. One story is Fiona's husband, Patrick, lost both his legs in an IED explosion in Afghanistan. And initially, the shockwaves of his injury threatened to derail their entire life. But during Patrick's recovery process, his scientifically inclined wife began studying advances in artificial limbs, and she went on to earn her master's degrees in prosthetics and orthotics, and she found the Wounded Warrior amputee softball team for her husband, and they both travel the country playing for the Wounded Warrior Amputee Softball League, and she helps all the men with their prosthetics. And every summer, they sponsor a week-long camp for children without limbs to learn that life without limbs is limitless. So their life was transformed, and they both grew just extremely, you know, within personal growth, and they found great resources out there. So,
can I just say I got goosebumps when you explain that? It is really a happy, lovely story. I would imagine, though, not all stories are great like that and have a happy ending.
Well, no, but we all love stories about heroes, right? Back to the man on the bridge. I say, you know, we're all on a hero's journey crossing that bridge, and we love to hear about people that make it to the other side. It gives us hope, and we all need those resources and tools and help to make it across our journey to the other side. So this book is inspirational first for caregivers that there is hope, and these are women that have found it's their stories. It's not mainly a self-help book, but these women have told their stories and found how their life's been transformed, and we call it post-traumatic growth, how they've grown as people and become stronger and become our hidden heroes.
Barbara, this text came... Oh, go on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So I found this story is really inspiring for my own life to overcome my challenges, too.
Here's a text that has come in. What about the husbands whose wives come home? How are those situations similar and or different?
That's a good question. I do have a chapter, and I highlight Tammy Duckworth, who's your, from Chicago,
yeah, she was
right?
Just elected.
Yeah.
Senator.
There's a chapter on her, and she says, you know, my limbs were blowing off in Iraq, and because my limbs were blowing off, people are listening to me. I'm not going to get my limbs back, but it gives me a platform to talk about the things that are important to me, such as jobs, education, and veterans' welfare. So she's a great hero, and I'm so excited for her winning. Just because, and there are actually 27 veterans from both parties now in Congress, so I'm super excited about that. But, yeah, there's a whole chapter on women who have been injured and their husbands who are caregiving for them, because our military is 16% women, and that number keeps growing. But to answer your question, the difference is most men already have a career, and they don't give up their career when their wives are injured, which is a good thing because then they don't get resentful and they don't leave the marriage. So most of the stories in the book, these women, like Fiona, got her own career. She didn't just stay home and feel sorry for herself, because lots of times that gets resentments going and then they leave the marriage. So healthy self-care is super important, and men tend to know how to do that. And women, I encourage, that's why I call it spa day, to keep care of themselves first. As the flight attendant says, put the oxygen mask on yourself before you put it on somebody else. So healthy self-care is super important for caregivers.
And SPA stands for Support, Purpose, and Appreciation. Do you have a website for many people who have questions or comments and would like to get the book, Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife, Not Just Surviving but Thriving? Because really, Barbara, this is definitely a book of hope for people out there.
Right. Just Google Barbara McNally or Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife. You can get the book on Amazon. And I'd love to interact with you through my website, my blog, Twitter, and you can sign up for Spa Day. Or if you're a civilian and buy the book, maybe there's one of these philanthropies you want to get involved with, such as Wounded Warrior Amputee League or Project Healing Waters. Another positive of researching for this book is I found there are some really great philanthropies out there. And I'm really excited that, yeah, America is great. We've got a lot of great healing that civilians are doing for our military. There's no better way to say thank you for your service than helping with one of these philanthropies.
Definitely a book of hope, and really giving up is not an option, is it?
No, I say suicide's a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And yeah, there's 22 military suicides a day.
A day.
And we definitely want to prevent that. So this book's a book of hope for anyone, caregivers or civilians who care.
Great job on this, Barbara.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Again, the book is called Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife. Her name is Barbara McNally. Pick it up. It's a good read. Thanks, Barbara. Have a good week.
You too. Thank you.
All right. We'll take a quick break and then more show. We've got news next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Happy that you're joining us. If you want to jump in, please do. 312-981-7200. I went back on a promise over the weekend. I vowed after one Bears game that I was done for the season. And I wasn't really intently watching it, but it was on in the room yesterday for...
It's good napping sound effects. The
yes.
Game of a, you know, the whistle
yes.
And the crowd roar.
Yes, that's exactly what I used it for. all right, so there's a couple things to discuss. Most notably this, toward the end of the game, and I didn't watch much of it. I saw a couple minutes here and there in the second half. Toward the end of the game, the announcers doing the Bears game, the Bears got crushed by Tampa Bay. I wish they'd given up. They kept stating emphatically that now Chicago has to decide whether or not Jay Cutler is their quarterback that they need to rely on and go forward and keep him as their quarterback.
Now's the time to bail.
The time to bail was day one,
yeah,
but immediately.
But they
he was
already...
such a wrong mismatch for for everybody involved. He just was terrible. I mean, he's abismal. That's
well,
all there is
to it.
Well,
they were hoping against hope he wouldn't be like that when they gave him all those years and all that money.
He is earning this year $16 million guaranteed on his contract. It's one of the most obscene contracts in the history of the NFL. I have no idea how they agreed to this deal, but...
How much does Tom Brady make, just out of curiosity? Is it in that same ballpark or way more? Because $16 million does not seem that much to me. For a good quarterback, I guess. For a bad one... Maybe.
His overall deal, Jay Cutler's overall deal, was a 7-year contract valued at $126.7 million plus bonuses.
The 7-year itch.
So he was upset yesterday at the end of the game. Dave Ennett was telling me all the details, and I can't use the same language, but he told Chicago to go blank themselves at the end. And Kristen Cavallari, his wife, is explaining. There's an article in the Tribune today. Kristen Cavallari says that she is bullied online daily.
Oh, boo-hoo.
There's no reason to bully her. I think part of his deal, part of Jay Cutler's deal, when you take that much money on, it's certainly not to be a successful quarterback. They're not paying him for that because that's not working.
Mm-mm.
But part of that money goes to be criticized because we want our team to win. There's people in this city that just breathe football, and every Sunday to be subjected to what he brings to a football field. And it's not just him. It's not just Jay Cutler. We've talked about this before. They don't know how to draft. Their management is among the worst in football. They just don't know how to put a team together no matter what. They always have a couple of good players. And this year they have a couple of good players. They don't know how
couple
to build around
it. Couple
is
not going to do it.
No.
And you said something off the air that is so true. They really could have been Chicago's first couple.
Without a doubt.
Because Chicago fans are so loyal. And when you win some games and do a good job, we all would have loved him. Loved
Think
him.
About this.
Loved him.
You got a quarterback. This is a scenario that is not happening. If you had a quarterback that knew how to win a football game, knew which team to pass to, did it on a regular basis, and his wife is a model, you go, who in the city wouldn't embrace them? Who wouldn't love this couple? But it's not like that.
I don't care that his wife's a model. Guys do. That makes no never mind to me.
But when looking for somebody to idolize, you go, wow, what a perfect couple. He's the quarterback of the Bears. She's a model. Good-looking
prom
people.
Queen,
yeah.
High school quarterback, I guess.
You go, well, this can only be good for them. Reality star turned author Kristen Cavallari, who is married to embattled Bears quarterback Jay Cutler, this is from Tracy Schwartz in the Tribune today, said that she's bullied online daily because her critics have low self-esteem.
That's what she's saying.
That's what she's saying.
What do they say? I want to know what the bullying is. You're married to adult.
Your husband sucks. I would imagine the bulk of it is that. But anyone who's saying
bullied,
that.
That's the truth.
No one's doing that out of self-esteem issues. They're doing it because they want a guy in there who understands which guy to throw to. Don't drop the ball quite as often.
You're asking way too much of a Bears quarterback,
I know.
Bill.
It's weird. On the weeks that I didn't watch the Bears, I was so at peace. You know, I was going, I don't have to subjected to that every week. And then they won a game last week against the Vikings that they should have won. And I'm like, oh, that might be it. All right, let's turn it. I'm here in the room.
They sucked you back in.
Ah, they sucked. You should have stopped with that, not the backed in part. Here's what she says. Kristen Cavallari says, I deal with bullying on a daily basis from social media. Literally, people always say stuff to me on Instagram. By the way, correct usage of the word literally.
Yes.
Because I imagine that they do. So good for you, Kristen. Cavallari told People magazine.
You're bullying her right now, saying that she used literally correctly.
Well, that's not a slam on her. That's a slam on the fact that almost every time literally is used, it's used incorrectly. But she used it properly. Cavallari told People magazine and Entertainment Weekly, Entertainment Weekly's network, in a feature that they were doing that battles cyberbullying. Here's what she says. You just have to remember that people who are going to comment, they're obviously coming from an insecure place. Do you agree with that or disagree? I don't think
no.
It has anything to do with insecurity.
Not
I think
for
it has,
this particular type
no.
of commenting.
It has to do with the fact that they want the team to win, and he's not providing that, and he's getting paid a boatload of money to not provide that. When you're happy with your life and everything's cool, you're not going to go and try to put somebody else down. I disagree. So just remember, it's not about you, it's about them, and all you have to do is block them and delete the comments. That's also true. If you're not happy with it, don't read it. It's
absolutely.
That simple. After Cutler led the Bears to defeat the Minnesota Vikings on October 31st, that was their previous game to yesterday, by the way, Cavallari posted a message that seemed to be directed at online critics. She said, "Can everyone shut up now?" Temporarily, yes.
She should not be getting involved in this. You know what I mean? She could have her own career. She doesn't have to fight his battles.
I'm positive that if you're her, this is a very stressful time. There's no doubt about it. Nobody wants their spouse to be subjected to
right.
the criticism and the ridicule that he is subjected to.
But it's worse that she's saying, oh, leave him alone. He's not that bad. Stop it.
Right.
Shut up. Quit
right.
saying that. Just stay. Remove yourself from the situation. Don't feed the trolls.
Right. Exactly.
And it's Cavallari.
Cavallari?
Cavallari.
Is it?
Yeah.
When Cutler threw two interceptions in the Bears' loss on Sunday, which I believe were back-to-back, right? Didn't he throw an interception?
I didn't watch
Tampa Bay didn't score, and then the next time he had the ball, he threw another interception. So he's consistent. I've often criticized him for being inconsistent. I'm wrong. He's extremely consistent.
You get so fired up about this. You shouldn't watch ever again.
It's maddening because you just say to yourself, how could you do worse than he does? And it's not just him. It goes higher up than him. They're horrendous at putting a football team together. They have no idea how to do it. They do that consistently.
Should they sell?
Yes. No, you know what? They should give the team away. They shouldn't even sell it. They should make no profit on the Bears at all. They should just say, 10th caller at 591. They get it.
What's the problem with the McCaskies? Why? I mean, seriously, because everybody whines about them.
Yeah.
But what are they not doing right?
Winning.
Bill, I understand that, but seriously.
There's some people in sports that just don't know how to win, and they're a prime example of that. They have no idea how to win. If you looked around the league, there's one example. If you look around sports, there's one example after another of knowing how to win. When you have a weakness, you draft to that weakness or you trade to that weakness. They don't know how to do that.
Why don't they hire someone who knows how to?
Because that's part of their problem, too, is they keep hiring guys. I don't know what it's almost like the play in the movie The Producers where they go, we'll do better if we fail. It's almost like they love that. That's the recipe for success. Let's try to fail. They're great at failing. That's all they're great at.
I feel really sorry for the Chicago Bears.
You should. I really do.
It's an embarrassment every week.
It is.
Like, I would just, you know how Colin Kaepernick is kneeling during the anthem? I would just, like, kneel during the whole game.
During a game.
Just sit on the bench the whole game, refuse to go out on the field. That would be better than what they're doing.
Wouldn't it?
I'm embarrassed for them.
I know.
They're embarrassed for themselves.
Kyle Long, who is one of the better Bears, he really is. Like I said, every year they get a sprinkling of guys that you go, that guy knows what he's doing. Normally what the Bears do once they find a guy like that is they either trade him or they don't sign him to another year. That's their standard practice. If anyone's good on the team, they go,
Matt Forte.
We don't need that guy. Matt Forte is a perfect example. One of the best players in football, the Bears go, I don't really think there's a place for you here. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate it. So Kyle Long gets injured, and you could see it on his face. I mean, he was fired up. He still wants the team to win. But if I'm him, I go, I'm just going to sit the rest of the season out. What's the point?
I think some of the players on the Bears are trying to injure themselves.
It'd be a smart move. It really would.
Can we take a break and take some calls?
Yeah.
You got to stop watching because you are way too fired up. And off the air, you're like, Bears, that'd be a great thing to talk about. And
I saw
your blood pressure boil.
For a month, I didn't see a second of a Bears game for a month. The team is awful. Why waste any time? And then yesterday I go, I might as well. Let's just turn it on for a little bit. And this is what it does to me because I legitimately want them to win. I so want them to win. They just don't. They can't.
Jim had it on yesterday. He was running around doing other things, and I tried a new lemon orzo soup recipe from Pinterest during the game, and it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
I should have watched the game.
Perfect food to go along with the perfect game.
I didn't expect it to be horrible, but it was. Too much time, and I don't mean to put it together, the spice.
Right. The
Very
same
timey.
Time with the food and the game, time management. Spelled differently, but it's the same problem. All right, if you want to talk about this, can you tell? I am.
I don't like you like this.
Really,
just stop watching.
That's the only way to handle it. All right, 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in by text or by phone. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, so the Bears lost again yesterday to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 111-2. It was close until the last 59 and a half minutes, and then Tampa Bay just started scoring and didn't stop.
How did they beat the Vikings?
Can't figure that out for the life of me.
Just a fluke.
It's there's an adage that on any given day, any team can beat any other team, and that's why that exists, because one of the worst teams in football beat one of the best teams in football. It doesn't happen a lot, but it happens sometimes.
All right, you want to talk to Jim?
Yes, to talk me off the ledge.
You're already off the ledge. You really are.
Yeah,
Hi, Jim.
Bill.
Hi.
Embrace it. I stopped watching the Bears halfway through last season. And I'm telling you, my blood pressure's down.
Yep.
I play golf on nice days. Like yesterday, I was playing a nice round of golf at 12:30. It was fantastic.
Yep.
My wife is happy because I'm helping out. I make Sunday dinners once in a while. I walk my dog in the woods.
Life is better, you know, and easier without watching the Bears just fall apart every Sunday, isn't it?
And you know what? My kids get on me because I was like that with the Cubs, you know? They said, how come? I said, you know what? In 1969, I was 13 years old. They broke my heart. I cried.
Yeah.
I stuck with them, but they never could get, you know? I said, but then they started winning, and I started watching, and then I'm rooting. And this year, I watched almost every game every day. You know,
it has been so beautiful outside too. We're not going to have winter, I don't think. Knock on wood.
Well, you know what? They'll start winning just enough to like blow the draft.
Yeah, they always do that.
Already blown it, haven't they?
You know what? They got to get away from the McCaskies. The McCaskies aren't going to sell them. That old lady. I don't know, man. Maybe she sucks blood out of the players to keep living. I don't know.
All right. See, why is everybody so mean to Virginia McCaskey and all the McCaskies? I mean, really.
Because they're the root of the problem.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Here's the thing. When Pintos were getting rear-ended and blown up and people were frying in their cars, would you go out and buy one?
No.
Okay. That's the whole thing. You want me to come back? Put a product out there that I could enjoy watching.
Agreed.
You give me crap on a stick, and I'm going to wipe it off and throw it in the garbage.
That should be their name, not the Bears.
My time.
The Chicago.
You guys should be on from like 12 to 4 on Sunday.
All right. You want to do that? Yeah. I'll do that.
I'm not doing that.
All right.
Although it would give you something to do.
This is going to kill Ed Obradovich. This is going to, the cause of death, Bears fan. That's what it's going to say.
Oh, I know. I know my kid was all upset because the Bears lost again, you know?
Yeah.
And I shouldn't say kid. He's 30 years old. But he's all upset. I said, Trump's about to become this? Seriously?
I know. And that's part of the reason I watched the game yesterday is I've been so, like, steeped in politics all week. It's like I just need to escape this for a few hours. No, this made me crazier.
I know. Just, you know, Doctor Who marathon.
All right. All
thank
right.
you, Jim.
That'll work. I have an answer for you, Wendy. You asked if Jay Cutler's salary is on par with the other quarterbacks in the NFL. Andrew Luck is the leading moneymaker in terms of quarterbacks. He has a guaranteed salary of $24.6 million. Keep in mind, Jay Cutler's at the paltry sum of only $16 million. Andrew Luck is at the top, 24.6. He is followed by Drew Brees of the Saints at 24.3. Joe Flacco of the Ravens is at 22.1. Aaron Rodgers from the Packers at $22 million. Russell Wilson of the Seahawks, $21.9 million. Ben Roethlisberger of the Steelers, $21.8 million.
Now, they're all pretty close together there.
Those are some of the premier quarterbacks in the league. And then you got a couple of other guys that are in the, like 12 to 20 range. And Jay Cutler's there at 16. He's kind of in the middle of the pack there. But I think
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady is, they don't show
him here.
Because
he's not, I'm surprised he's
not.
He's
right around 19 or 20 million. He's in there somewhere real close to that. So in terms of all the quarterbacks together, Jay Cutler is kind of in the middle right now. But there was a time a couple years ago he was making more than Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers just got a pay boost 2 years ago. Isn't it?
Especially after yesterday.
Well, yeah.
Okay, Packer fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not going to become a Packer fan. I'm sorry. I can't do that. I'm from Chicago. I can't.
It's almost easier, with all due respect, Kim, to just avoid football. Like for me,
You got Blackhawks. Look at what Patrick Kane did on the ice last night.
How awesome was that? That's we can all
better.
Unite there.
All right.
That's where we all come together.
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Blackhawks.
The Blackhawks are our kumbaya team.
Yes, they are. All right. A break, some news. Kim will give you the news, and then Eric Zorn stops in. A lot has gone on this week, and Eric will cover some of it with us.
About?
You know. So stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
Yes, we do. Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune to help us make sense of it all. Eric?
Hello, Zorn.
Hi.
The greatest father that ever was born?
Yes, that's the lyric, yes.
Oh, I mean, you're lucky.
I didn't write the song.
Right.
But I have to accept the verdict of the lyricist.
Don't you, though?
I really do. I can't fight it. It's there.
At this time last week, remember way, way back to 7 days ago.
I was reassuring Wendy, as I recall.
I did.
Oh,
exactly.
You all have done that. Bill lied to me. Eric lied to me.
Yep.
Well, here's the thing I want. I want to come to the defense of the American media.
Okay.
And that is that, you know, when those of us who are looking at what this election is going to do, all we have to look at are the polls.
Right.
I don't say we ought to be out there going to Trump rallies and we would have picked something up that we didn't already know from the zillions of interviews and zillions of things that we read and saw about this election. We all knew that about 60 million people were going to vote for Donald Trump. That wasn't a mystery to anybody. Nobody said this was going to be a blowout on any side. So we relied on the polls. The polls said that Hillary Clinton was going to win. I think the average at the end was 3.5%. That she was going to win the popular vote by 3.5%. It ended up she won the popular vote by about 1%, I think was the
right
latest
around there,
season,
yeah.
Something
yeah.
Like that. So they were off by 2.5%, which is
margin
kind of as
error.
What happened. I think it's actually a smaller error than it was in 2012. Now, in 2012, the difference was that the margin of error didn't change the result. It was like, well, okay, the result was different, but Barack Obama still won. So we were all patting ourselves on the back saying, why aren't we clever, ladies and gentlemen, for having predicted that election so well? We are at the mercy of these polls. Everybody is.
People polls, saying, schmoles. People lied. People didn't want to admit they were voting for Donald Trump because they were shamed by family members.
Well, this is the lesson that we should have learned. We should have learned this. Every election seems like we should learn our lesson. In year 2000, Al Gore was 3% up in the polls right before Election Day. And he ended up, of course, again, narrowly winning the popular vote, but losing the election. So, and every time we keep putting our hand on the hot stove of these polls and then going, and relying on them too much. And I've got to say, it wasn't just the media that did this. It was also the campaigns did it. You know, the Clinton campaign didn't go to Wisconsin, didn't go to Michigan,
didn't think they needed to.
They were relying on not only the main polls, but their internal polls. So, you know, the idea that, we all should have been out there driving the roads of rural America and stopping by the VFW halls and talking to these people and rubbing shoulders with them, and then we would have seen what was happening here. You know, that's not the case. I mean, the case is that we just looked at these polls, and the polls were saying this, and so we said, this is what we think is going to happen. But nobody said it was a sure thing. People were really bagging on Nate.
You
Silva,
did. The, Bill the, did.
I did.
You said it was a sure thing?
I thought it was a sure thing. I can't tell you in my life something that I thought was more of a sure thing.
I was
this.
Just trying to make Wendy feel better.
Oh, you were?
And you were not. You thought it was. And it's funny, Bill, because you were saying they're never wrong in Vegas. Their job
They've
is
never
to make
it
money.
Until last week.
I heard you say that on Friday when you were, you were doing your.
They've picked it. All right, so two indicators. Number one, Las Vegas had picked the winner every single time until last Tuesday. And then that guy we had on, that professor who.
He said Trump was going to win.
He said Trump was going to win.
And he didn't. He wasn't happy about it.
Right. But people blasted him like crazy, going, "You're the guy that's never wrong. You're going to be wrong this time." He was wrong.
He was right. So right.
He
was right. So well, I mean, the thing is that in college football on Saturday, Michigan lost to my alma mater. Michigan lost to Iowa by a point. They were ranked second in the country. It was a big, huge upset. Nobody saw it coming. You don't see the sports media rending their garments and beating themselves up for how did we miss this? How did we not see this coming? Why weren't we in the locker room talking to the defensive tackles? Hmm. Why didn't we see all the bumper stickers in the parking lot that told us that Iowa was a great team?
Well, because there's slightly more at stake in this particular.
But I'm saying that you make these projections based on the knowledge that you have.
Sure.
And I'm not sure that there's a whole huge takeaway here. It's not like there was a overwhelming mandate for Trump. He won the Electoral College, which wins him the election, gives him the presidency. I mean, I'm not going to dispute that at all. I'm not going to say he didn't win, it didn't win fair and square. I did make the point in my Sunday column. I think it's important to make this point frequently, which is that, yes, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, but they weren't playing for the popular vote. You know, and so that means that Clinton didn't campaign in Texas and Trump didn't campaign in California. And there were votes to be had in both places for those candidates had they gone to look for them. They knew
the obvious is what the electoral represents to those two states is it's unwinnable if you're a Republican to win California and it's unwinnable if you're a Democrat to win Texas. You can't do it because of the way the electoral college is structured.
Right. So that if you replay this whole thing and say, what if they were just playing for the popular vote? The result would have been different. I don't know how different, but it would have been different. So it's not necessarily true that Hillary Clinton would be the president if we didn't have the Electoral College. I mean, it's a good talking point for people like me who are disappointed that Trump won. But it's not. I'm not sure that it means that the you know, narrow majority of the public. I mean, basically, the takeaway from this is the country is very strongly divided.
And we have to come together. These protests have to stop. This hatred has to stop.
I don't think the protests have to stop. I think the protests...
But what does that do? And I understand
aspect,
it.
The violence aspect has to stop.
Yes.
But the protests, I don't think, have to stop.
I just don't think the protests are all that wise right now because they don't have an ask. They're not... like, what are they... They're just protesting... They're not protesting a specific action or policy. I do think that one value of them is that they are letting Trump know, letting... you know, his people know that there is a group of people who are mobilized, who are angry, who are ready to protest when he, like, say, starts a deportation force.
Right.
Or when he, you know, yanks back Obamacare.
But that's a perfect time to protest. I just feel, and everybody, like I said, Bill, I told you before, we have a microphone to say, I didn't vote for that guy. Other people should have a voice to be able to say, I don't support him. But he's the president-elect. I feel the protesting would mean more if you were looking. What are they looking to gain? That's what I guess I don't get.
Right. No, I agree with. I think that they. But it is a show of force right now,
and everybody has the right.
But I would like to see. First of all, I wish they had mobilized like this before the election. I wish that some of this energy that's out there right now had been out there a week ago, but it wasn't. And it may be telling Trump, I say to his people, that, you know, that they got to watch themselves because their hold on the public is not nearly what they said. If you saw 60 Minutes last night, Trump was saying, oh, I won easily. He's convinced in his mind that he won this election going away.
Yeah.
His margin in the Electoral College reflects the margin in the country. No, the country is very split and the country is very skeptical about him. Even the people who voted for him, a lot of them are not quite sure about him. They just preferred him over Hillary. They think that
they wanted to
shake things up, but they didn't even think he was qualified. Something like 60% of the voters thought that Trump was not qualified
for
president.
He does not seem like he believes he's qualified from what I heard on 60 Minutes. Honestly, it's like, boy, this is way bigger than I anticipated.
Yeah, wah, wah.
You know, this is the real deal. This wasn't just a popularity contest.
He did seem really sober, didn't he, after that meeting with Obama, when he comes out and he's like, he looked like, oh, boy.
Boy, I got a lot really to do is. Here.
I got a lot of homework to do here to catch up because he's got to hit the ground running. And I was not cheered by his selection of Bannon for his
Steve
his,
Bannon is
his strategist.
Yeah.
He's going to make him sort of co-equal with his chief of staff. And these are the two people who really have his ear in the White House. And Bannon, you know, he was running that alt-right website Breitbart.
I know.
Before this, and that sent a signal. He's serious about a lot of the things that he said.
Right.
So the fact these protesters are out there just maybe sending a message, I do hope they restrain themselves and don't commit acts of violence. Another thing I want to bring up, since we're talking about protests, do we have time or should we break?
Yeah, let's take
a
quick break.
You had this look. I'm worried
about the time management. All right, so let's take a quick break and then more discussion on this and other topics. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune is joining us. We're talking about the events of the week, and it's been quite a week. The other thing to bring up about Trump and the aftermath of Trump is, and I'm not the first person to bring this up, is that the Supreme Court will be influenced by Donald Trump, not just in the near future, but for decades. There's one Supreme Court justice opening right now, but there's three more judges that are in their 80s. They'll be retiring fairly soon, so his appointments will shape the Supreme Court for decades to come.
I don't think Ruth Bader Ginsburg is ever going to retire.
You don't think she will?
And I think people have been sending her vitamin supplements all week. Yeah, you're right there. I think there are three of them who are right up around, right over 80 or right up close to 80. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is over.
In early 80s.
So, yeah, though it's definitely, he's going to have an appointment. He's going to take the seat that Merrick Garland should have had. And he's going to have his choice there, and we'll see. That's going to be a very early
Scott
signal.
Baio.
Scott Baio. Chachi.
You'll see.
You know, another thing that I wish that Trump would do is give a speech and tell his supporters who are out there taking advantage of his victory as a license to express their bigotry and hatred and so on. And this has been going on. The Southern Poverty Law Center has a website, and they've kept track of hundreds of these incidents around the country in the last, you know, since the election, of, you know, students marching down the halls, kind of shouting, build a wall at Hispanic students and so on. It's incident after incident of these things happening in Trump's name. And Trump responded to this on 60 Minutes last night. He said, oh, I hadn't heard about that. Well, they should stop it. They should stop it. He needs to give a speech. This is his first big test, I think, of leadership. He needs to get up and say, look, stop it, but he needs to say, look, we campaigned. It was a rough campaign. Things were said, but this is not the America that we want to have now. We need to respect these people. He needs to clarify what he means.
Do you think he would mean it, or would those just be forced words from his staff saying, hey, this is your job to step up and let America know that this will not be tolerated? But I don't know if he believes it.
I don't know if he believes it, but I do know that, I mean, I don't know what's in his heart, but I know that he has unleashed some ugly things that are in the hearts of other people. His campaign has done that. And he needs to address that, you know, for the good of the country and for, you know, the good of his administration. He needs to set that aside. People are really afraid. You know, it's all over you hear stories all the time about kids who are crying, kids who are, you know, African-American kids, Muslim kids, people who are afraid that this is, and Hispanic children also, afraid of what's going to happen to them. He needs to allay those fears to the extent that he can. He needs to make some statements. He needs to come forward and do this and be saying, well, why aren't the Democrats saying that people shouldn't be, you know, yelling terrible things about Melania? Well, maybe they should, but he is now the president-elect. And he has got to take a stand on that. And I really wish that he would take some leadership in that area. It's one of the first tests of leadership for him is to make a statement like that and to really distance himself and to tell those people that he wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah.
You know, he'll answer a question about it, but he needs to, you know, it's not a tweet, it's a speech. So, yeah.
In the future, there was so much quote-unquote dirt dug up about Donald Trump, and none of it mattered. Not a single bit of it mattered. So in the future, do we know that from now on, that whoever's running for president can have so many skeletons in their closet and it really won't faze the American public?
I think we do. I mean, I think that's a good point. I think there's a what we notice over and over again, that things would come up and people would say, I don't care. I want change. I want the basic message. I think the bigger message from this campaign is that you can promise anything you want to the American people. You don't have to back it up with a plan. You are trying to persuade them with a vision that may even be an incoherent vision. I mean, the idea that he has that he's going to, you know, bring back the mining industry to West Virginia, that he's going to create these trade wars and that's going to help the working class in America, that he's going to cut everybody's taxes and increase infrastructure spending, and he's going to have a health care plan that costs less and has better care than Obamacare. All
right.
These things, yeah, it's all real easy to say, but that's what people want to hear. Hillary Clinton never articulated any kind of vision that was anything like that. You know, stronger together, and she had plans, and it seemed incremental. I frankly think they were far better, far more realistic. But realistic plans don't sell. The public wants a really broad vision, a really broad promise, and I think that's the lesson to take away here. Is the next time you run for president, Democrats, you're going to have to promise a lot, even if you're not going to deliver it, because what's going to happen is that he's not going to be able to deliver on all these promises. You're already seeing him backing away from the wall. You're seeing him backing away from repealing Obamacare.
He was asked, you know, there were talks about maybe a fence. Well, in some parts, a fence might be okay, but we're still going to need a wall.
Yeah, but, you know, so, I mean, to me, that's the depressing takeaway here, is that so many voters fell for what I believe was a con game.
Right.
And so I guess the lesson is, you got to play a con game. To beat a con man, you got to play a con game. And that's depressing.
But what about the things he promised his supporters that he may not deliver? Is there going to be a revolt there then, too?
He will blame Obama. He'll blame...
How?
I don't know.
And the Republican House and Senate, it's like there's no blame to go around anymore.
The Bush White House blamed Clinton for 9/11. I mean, you can figure out he was able to... He never accepted responsibility for anything. Never apologized for anything. This is Trump now. I don't see him saying, well, gee, I was wrong about that, or gee, I'm sorry I broke that promise. I don't think that his supporters are willing yet to turn on him. We'll see. We'll see what happens because it's a fragile coalition that he built. He's got a lot of people who voted for Obama who then, or at least the counties anyway, where he won. He won a lot of counties that Obama had won in 2008, 2012. So it's not like he's got these people forever.
Right.
So Wendy may be right. These people are going to say, hey, you know, I fell for a bill of goods
once
4 years ago, but I'm not going to fall for it again.
go back to the taxes for just a little bit, because he was adamant throughout the debates especially that Hillary Clinton was the woman whose plan was to raise taxes, him just the opposite, he's going to lower taxes. But then minutes later, he would talk about the infrastructure of the country and how we're going to fix the roadways and fix the bridges and make the airports better than they've ever been and increase the police presence and on and on and on and on. And why didn't anybody say to him, but it's tax money that pays for all that, and if you're lowering taxes, where's that money coming from?
Well, this is part of the idea that if you lower all these taxes, what happens is people end up making so much more money.
They spend it.
I mean, this is the trickle-down idea, which is and it's never worked, but they keep hanging on to it, which is we cut everybody's taxes, and it creates this huge surge in the economy, and actually tax revenues go up. This is the conservative think tank idea that's been around forever. Never seems to work. They're trying it right now in Kansas.
Yeah.
And it's been a disaster.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's his answer to this, which is like, well, yes, I'll cut everybody's taxes, but then there'll be such a big boom that we're going to see a net increase in revenue. We can spend it on the wall,
right,
on infrastructure and other plans. So, you know, it's frustrating because it's very difficult to argue with that. And it's so appealing. Like, hey, you'll cut my taxes, and we'll be able to have more services.
Right.
That's what people want. But it's
impossible.
It's impossible. So.
He's putting together a staff. He told us during the election he's going to get the best people. Wouldn't name any names, but he will find the best people. Some people he said that we've never even heard of. That's how good they are. So far, it's been all Republicans, obviously. But he's got to have a couple of token Democrats. He's got to. Who will they be? Do we have any idea?
I don't know. I mean, we're so polarized. They're so distant. They're not those kind of Democrats in the middle the way President Obama picked Ray LaHood,
yeah,
from Illinois,
yeah,
to be his, I think it was, transportation secretary. There aren't people you can, and I think he picked Cohen, didn't he, or was to be defense secretary at one point. I forget who did that. But there is that bipartisan, that sort of little bit of team of rivals thing that happens where you want some people from the other party in your cabinet.
Yeah.
And actually James Comey, the FBI director, was a Republican that Obama appointed.
Right.
You know, and now Trump would not say during
if
the interview
he's staying
whether,
or not.
Whether he's going to ask for his resignation. I don't know that he can make him quit, but he might ask for his resignation. So,
yeah.
So I think it is important. We'll see.
Would he ask for Comey's resignation, though? In a weird side note to all this, Comey helped him.
Well, Hillary Clinton was saying that not only was that letter that came out 9 days before the election,
yeah,
that helped. Because the letter came out and said, "I'm looking at Anthony Weiner's email. There might be some stuff in there that affects Hillary." And then the Sunday before the election, he says, "Well, never mind.
She's clear."
And her theory is that the one 9 days before had a lot of people come out and vote for Trump, and then the one 3 days before energized Trump supporters.
Yeah, right.
They thought, "Oh my gosh, the FBI really is on her side. We've got to get out and support."
Yeah. All right.
I mean, I think there's more problems with her campaign than that. But
that's Eric Zorin. Read him in the Chicago Tribune. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it. Have a great week. We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has next. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Kim.
Didn't Kim do a nice job? I mean,
thank
really.
Thank you so much.
She did a nice job.
She's the best.
The best.
You know, what do you want from me?
Just your friendship. Your trust.
That's it.
That's all.
We forgot to do something before our break.
Something important. The people over at Firehouse Subs have been very nice to say, your listeners get hungry. You guys get hungry. You go out and have lunch. I know your listeners get hungry. So let's give them a chance to enjoy Firehouse Subs.
Well, we've got something for you. It is the Bill and Wendy Firehouse Subs lunch break. And if you missed it today, have it another day. You can win a Firehouse Subs gift card right now. 312-981-7200. What color?
I don't see color, Wendy. People of all colors, creeds, religions, anyone can win.
What caller you want?
I'd say caller 11.
Caller 11, 312-981-7200. I was so proud of myself for getting the number
right. You
were
going great.
I know. And if you don't win the gift card today, if you're not caller 11, ask for the Bill and Wendy special. You will get the seasonal turkey and cranberry sub for only $4.99. Find a Firehouse Sub near you at firehousesubs.com. Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen, Bill.
They founded it. All right. Can you settle a bet between Kevin and myself, please? Can I use you as an arbitrator, as a judge?
You really want me to be the arbitrator?
Kevin and I, during the break, were walking down the hall, because that's what we do during our break. We find a hall and we walk down it. We're going one way, and down the other way is Peggy Pegler, who is a salesperson here at WGN. And as I pointed out to Kevin, you can read about Peggy in the Guinness Book of World Records because she has the word Peg in her name more than any other person on the planet. Peggy Pegler has her name, has the name Peg twice. That's the record. So I say hello to her. Kevin says hello to her. And then once we have, you know, hearing distance, he said, I found out that Peggy's name isn't even Peggy. And I said, no, it's not.
Oh, don't even.
Yeah, he did. He said, I found out that her real name is Margaret. And I explained that a lot of times, like all of them, when you meet somebody named Peggy, that's not their real name.
Kevin.
Their name is Margaret. But he said, well, that doesn't make sense. And to his credit, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. Because it doesn't make sense. Because Peggy and Margaret are completely different words. Like a lot of times, if your name is Thomas, you go, oh, Tom. If your name is David, Dave.
William?
Will. Or Bill. Or Billy. Or Mac or Buddy. But there's no reasoning at all for this, but it is still true, right?
Yeah, the whole shortening the name thing is completely blown away when you say that Jack is a nickname for John. Because mm-hmm. usually a nickname shortens something,
mm-hmm.
and Jack and John both have four letters.
Right. You're not saving time.
I know.
You're not saving any time.
That one really confuses me.
Right.
I've never had a nickname my whole life.
Your name is hard to shorten.
Wend, usually.
If you're in a real hurry. Yeah, if you're in a hurry, I guess.
But, you know, the Margaret Peggy thing is kind of, and even my sister's name is Elizabeth, and you could go Liz, Beth, or mm-hmm. she goes by Betsy.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even get that either.
No, yours is almost impossible. You have to be very creative to shorten Wendy. Because it already sounds like a nickname, doesn't it? That has all the elements of a good nickname.
Right, because Gwen is short for Gwendolyn. See, those nicknames, and not even a nickname, but a shortening of a name makes total sense to me.
Because we need to budget our time better as a society.
In this ADHD nation, of course we do.
I wonder if they do that in all cultures. I wonder, you know, like all around the planet, is that a thing people do? Do they shorten it? Because really, you're only saving on your average name into nickname transition, you're saving about a half a second tops. So do they do that in other parts of the world? Is that a global thing or is that just something we do?
It's a folksy thing.
I guess it is.
You know, to like shorten things and pretend you're friends.
You know how in parts of Africa, like if you run into a guy, his name will be like, so do they call him that or do they shorten that to just...
Just one.
Just one. That's mm-hmm. it. That's his whole nickname. All right. I guess that saves some time.
Hey, Kevin, did somebody win our Firehouse Subs lunch?
Kev.
Yes. Her name was Joan, and she is our winner. She was from Romeoville.
How about that?
Congrats, Joan.
We'll do it again tomorrow. Yeah. You get free lunch thanks to Firehouse Subs
yep.
every day.
Yep. So
or Fi Sub.
No, you can't. You don't need to shorten that. Businesses don't want their name shortened. Ask Coca-Cola.
Yes, they do.
Or Coke. I know.
Oh, did you see the new Coke bottle?
Uh-uh. Is it a holiday version?
Yeah, it's so cool. We saw a video of it. Remember in our office and you said, what would anybody want with that?
Right. That, I think, is only in Asia, I think.
Oh,
you can't get it here. There's a little strap on it that when you pull on the strap, it becomes a bow like you'd see on a Christmas gift.
It's a quirky Coke bottle with a secret. It's bringing joy right now. This from Huffington Post. If you've been busy trying to wrap your head around the election, you may not have noticed that the holiday season is swiftly approaching. And with it, a slew of things to be excited about. Coca-Cola Japan got a head start on the ladder with a quirky new bottle label that turns itself into a festive bow in just three easy steps. You can search it on Google, and it's really, I think it's cute. According to Coca-Cola Japan, you peel the label most of the way off, leaving one sticky end attached, and then you pull out this little tab of tape that's laced through the label, and you pull, and the result is the most festive bottle of soda that has ever been seen.
So is their goal to say you can now give this a bottle of Coke as a gift? Look, it becomes a gift very easily. You pull this and you have a gift.
No, you said that in the office too. And I said, what cheapie is going to give a bottle of Coke for a gift?
I didn't say a good gift.
Just
an inexpensive gift.
When you have people over for the holidays and you have a big bucket of ice sitting on your counter with various soda pop or beer in it.
Mm-hmm.
This could be like, oh, can I get you a bevy? And they say, sure, I'd like a Coke. And you grab the Coke bottle, mm-hmm. you pull the little tab, and you say, here's your Coke.
Here's your Coke.
And then there's a little bow on
you're
it.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I mean, you're going to give them a beverage anyway. What's the difference?
Right.
This just dresses it up. Yeah,
I get it. All right.
I get excited with the stupid polar bear on the Diet Coke can. I mean, that excites me for
yeah.
the Christmas holidays.
Sure. It doesn't take much. It's just that. That's all you
it's
need.
It's hard to do with a can, though, to put the bow on it.
I know. All right. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back. And we have a lot more show for you, so stay here. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And it's Military Monday here on the Bill and Wendy Show, sponsored by the Federal Savings Bank. And with us this afternoon, Allison Rubel, President and CEO of USO of Illinois. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. I have to tell you, we've all heard about USO. We've heard about USO shows. We've heard Bob Hope. We've heard Jessica Simpson. Please tell me exactly what the USO is and what it does.
Absolutely. Well, USO stands for United Service Organizations. That's the acronym. And, you just mentioned Bob Hope. That's the origin of the USO. So we are celebrating our 75th anniversary this year.
Wow.
We are a civilian, nonprofit organization, so we're not part of the government.
This You're not?
No. Completely privately funded. It's been like that since day one. It is American citizens supporting their service members and their families.
For years and years, as Wendy mentioned, Bob Hope, and they still do it to this day,
yes.
they'll get a bunch of comics and singers, and they'll head out to mm-hmm. places where the war is happening, and they put on shows, right? That's
Absolutely.
Part of it?
Well, and you know, the USO was born on the premise that it's the American people that should be there to support our service members. And you know, if you think of 1941, there was no internet, there were no cell phones, you sent a letter, and you didn't have a TV to look at someone. So FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, really wanted our troops, who many of them had never been off the farm, think
mm-hmm.
about that, would go overseas very young, and music, entertainment, a familiar face, a warm cup of coffee, a donut,
right.
Someone friendly would give them some comfort, would
Those
connect
soldiers
them.
Wanted to see Martha Ray, and
yes,
they did.
They did.
Good
well,
for
it
them.
Gave the, it. I think it did something for their heart, right?
Yeah.
It made them feel better. It comforted them. It helped them focus on the work that they had to do. That is still the case of the USO, and we still send entertainers overseas around the world into very dangerous places sometimes. Here in Illinois, now that's done from our headquarters level in Arlington, Virginia. Here in Illinois, we do support entertainment, and we support stateside our service members, as well as send support overseas with things like care packages. But the USO has had to evolve over 75 years due to the nature of how we fight our conflicts, technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, more than half of our service members are married with children. That was not the case in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But the USO is there to make sure not only the service member, but their family's taken care of. And so from the time they go to boot camp, graduate boot camp, train, deploy, come home, the USO is there in part of their entire life. We are from boot camp to deployment, homecoming, even to the time they transition out, because it's really about seamless service. It's being this is our new tagline is the force behind the forces, that our service members need to know that the American people appreciate them and support them, and then they can focus on their work and do the very important work that they need to do.
You mentioned the transitioning earlier in our show. We had Barbara McNally on, who's written a book, Wounded Warrior, Wounded Wife.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think about these things. I'm not from a military family, so you don't think of how important and how difficult the transition can be when they're finished. They've been deployed. They've done their job for their country, and they come home, and now what are you going to do for me?
Well, absolutely, and the service member and the spouse, because you know life is very different when than one parent or one care provider is gone. You learn how to balance the home life, and that balance is thrown off in good and bad ways. For our service members, certainly, you know, post-traumatic stress navigating out of a military life into a civilian life, how to find a job, going back to school, navigating VA benefits, and then for the family members that keep the home fire burnings, and for the children, you know, okay, mom and dad is home again. Now there's a new normal in the household. So we as a USO give our service members the opportunity to take part in programming, free programming that gives them a chance to enjoy shows, you know, free tickets to things, opportunities to take their families out, things that help rebuild family bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have to be an expert at connecting them to area resources. And there are many. As you know, there are 45,000, I don't know if you've heard this set, 45,000 military support nonprofits in the United States right now of, you know, varying degrees. The USO seeks out the best in class. And then we, if we don't do it ourselves, we connect them to those that do. So everything from navigating to finding a job to building a resume, and even for the spouse, you know, the average military family, you know, a kid that's 12 years old, sometimes they will have moved 10 times. So the military family moves on average every 2 to 3 years. So you just think about that relocation. So even the spouse, you know, finding a new job in a new community. The one thing is that the USO is that familiar brand, that symbol, the USO, the red, white, and blue, the stars, the six stars. They know that we're there. We're going to take care of them. We're going to connect them. We're going to be the force behind the forces. And I think that's partly what we're celebrating in our 75th anniversary this year, is just that we've been there for the long haul, and we're going to continue to be so.
I think most of us, I'll speak for myself, but I think many of us probably always assume that the USO was in conjunction with the U.S. government,
yeah,
probably funded by it. That's a common misconception, right?
It is, and I think part of it is that, you know, the beauty of our logo being red, white, and blue, and the stars and the stripes, or their own stripes, I guess, but the stars. But I think it's just the close proximity that we've always had to the military. We are not military, but it is as though we are. And in fact, that trust extends to the service members themselves, who, you know, even statistically report that they trust the USO understands me, even when maybe I don't feel like the majority of the, you know, of population maybe gets what I do. And I will say, you know, I'm a civilian. I've never served. And so I'm in a very special place. And I've been always on this learning curve. The USO is just a passion for me, because I see it's just about always improving the life of that person. And I think that's why it's important that we are as close as we are to the military community, and we're going to continue to be so. But the misconception is also, I think, the reason we're so close to the military. But yeah, it's been a lot of time. So I'm glad that I'm here to talk about
Good.
It today.
We are too.
So that anyone can learn.
It's so great watching the Blackhawks games.
Yes.
And if you're lucky enough to be there live when it happens, when they honor the vets, it's really a touching and beautiful moment.
Oh, my gosh.
And loving the Blackhawks jerseys that they sported for Veterans Day. Pretty fantastic.
We're pretty psyched about those. That is certainly, in fact, I heard we're a little over $28,000 on the auction right now, online auction, which, by the way, if you want to bid, it's auction.nhl.com. All the proceeds benefit the USO of Illinois and our hundreds of programs and services every year. We've been partnering with the Blackhawks, and the Boeing Company actually supports these jerseys, makes them possible, and of course the Blackhawks and the NHL make it possible. I was there on Friday. We had 75 veterans on the ice
awesome.
During the national anthem for our 75th anniversary, and then I got to watch them warm up in the jerseys. And it's also neckties, so if you want, like the staff is getting involved. And the Blackhawks, I mean, they are just such incredible partners, such incredible patriotic supporters of our military, and this is just another example of that.
Auction.nhl.com.
Auction.nhl.com.
That's it.
Is
okay.
where you can go to bid.
Right.
And that's through, by the way, November 28th. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
It's now through November 28th you can bid. And I think Marion Hosses is looking pretty good, and so is Duncan Keith.
Good.
Oh,
yes.
The two best players
nice.
Ever. And the Federal Savings Bank has teamed up along with Walgreens to make a considerable donation to the USO of Illinois. Sweet Home Chicago Care Package Program.
Yes.
Some definite necessary items to be donated. Baby wipes, nuts and seeds, beef jerky, thick black socks, seasoned salt, Kleenex, travel size Kleenex, lip balm, chewing gum, ramen noodles. Congratulations on 75 years, and how do we help out with these care packages?
Well, I'll tell you, Walgreens is making a donation of these items. Every time I'm on the air here, I want to thank Walgreens for that, and of course, the Federal Savings Banks for all they're doing. You know, this is just an example of the grassroots support that the USO is all about. You know, the majority of our support is grassroots like this, and so these care packages are going to go overseas in time for the holidays, and all the things you named off are the things that our service members need. And if you heard in the news over the weekend, you know, we're still at war. There's still very dangerous things going on. We can't forget that. And I think this is we never forget as a USO. And I'm really grateful to be on here today with you and that you support this as well, because these are the type of things that Walgreens and the Federal Savings Bank are doing to help raise that awareness and keep us, especially as we celebrate the holidays with family, how important that is for a service member to feel that connection to home.
And Allison Rubel, President and CEO of USO of Illinois, congratulations on your tireless effort and 75 years of the USO. That's amazing.
Thank you very much.
Tell Martha Ray we said hello.
I've
lost
do my
touch
best.
With her. All right. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
And again, appreciation to Federal Savings Bank for helping put this together. We'll take a quick break and then the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Well, he went down to dinner in his Sunday best. Excitable boy, they all said.
Wendy, in times like this, tumultuous times, when we're looking for the voice of reason, we're looking for somebody to calm the storm,
looking for the bedrock,
make things right again. One name comes to mind, Wendy, and that name is David Hochberg, and he's sitting right there, right over there. Hi, David. How are you?
How are you? I'm like your wubby. I'm yes. Your warm bubby blanket.
Yeah, that's exactly what you are, as a human wubby.
I never thought I'd ever hear either of you say that.
He is our Whoopi Goldberg, is who David is.
All right, be quiet, everybody. We've had an election. Yeah. Were you aware of that?
Yep. Yeah.
Perhaps people are wondering if the results of this controversial election has changed the mortgage industry.
Yeah.
Has it?
Well, rates are up a little bit, and it was ironic. I was sitting there glued to my couch like most of the people, and I was watching the returns, and I'm like, Trump might actually win. I'm emailing my guys, you better go over your list, because I'm seeing Dow futures down 500 points, Dow futures down 700
points.
And
that was the uncertainty of everything, correct?
That was the uncertainty. I'm just like, whenever the stock market drops that much, and whenever there's like a kick in the pants like Brexit was a couple, 3 months ago, the bond market crashed and interest rates went down. And I'm emailing my guys, you better get off your couch. I don't care what you're doing. Trump might win. You better scrub your list down. It could be a great day to, you know, to get back on and refinance the people that missed the boat a couple of weeks ago. And then all of a sudden we get in and bond market rallied because interest rates, you know, not to go too deep here, but the 30-year fix is basically essentially tied to the 10-year note. And the 10-year note a week ago on the 14th, okay, a week ago today, was yielding at 1.828, and the 30-year fix were in the mid to high threes, okay? Today, 1 week later, the yield on the 10-year bond is at 2.21. It's up 40 pips, which means that equates to about a half a point in the interest rate. Because, I was completely wrong. I go in, you know, the day after the election, go, okay, let's fire this puppy up and have a good push to the end of the year, help people pay for college, pay for their
phone bill.
Well, their phone bill. Yeah, you know, Mr. Radio here. I thought I had the damn thing off. Sorry about that. You know, to pay for their Hanukkah, Christmas, and Kwanzaa gift. You know, just to get a New Year jump would be great. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the market opened up worse, and the interest rates have been going up. So the people that have been calling me that we quoted rates that wanted to think about it, and like, which means they're going to shop us, right? You know, you want to think about it. Oh, I got to talk to my uncle, my brother, my cousin, my husband. Called us back like this week on the people that we quoted them last Monday, and they're like, yeah, I like that 3.5% 30-year fixed loan, and I'm just
not
like,
there anymore.
I'm sure
it?
You would. I'm like, I'd like to get in a pair of 34-inch pants as well, but you know that
that's my favorite line that you have,
and I still look at them every day on the top of my closet. Like one day,
you're right there.
They're right there.
No, you're right there.
I'm about 8 inches away, but yeah, I'm right there. It'd be great.
Why?
Yeah, I'm right there. I can touch them. Can't get them through my friggin' ankles, but go ahead.
Why should a new president influence these rates? What exactly? How does
the uncertainty in the market.
Is that, all right.
It's the uncertainty in the market. There's a lot of big job creating programs coming out, job building. People are afraid of inflation. Okay, you got to borrow money. It's inflation. And just the overall uncertainty, what's going to happen? Okay, everybody woke up the next day and thought a black hole sinkhole was going to open up in the middle of the world here and suck everybody
down.
Some
people, to be fair, were happy.
Some people were happy, and some people are still panicking, and you know, thought the world was going to end.
I think Donald Trump is panicking a little bit, he was going to win.
Well, he asked Kim. He knew all the time he was going to win. I think it's a major shock to the entire system. But listen, it is what it is, okay? You wake up, the sun comes up, and it's a new day. We have three branches of government, and you know what? It is what it is. And there are people out there, yeah, but they're all controlled by the Republicans. Well, you know what? Listen, there's checks and balances. We have live in the greatest country on the planet. It's lasted over 200 years with what our founding fathers did in the room. I saw Hamilton. You know, I wasn't in the room when it happened, whatever, in 1776. It's been a good system for a lot of years, and we'll figure it out. It'll be okay. Interest rates might be a little higher. Still getting 30, 40 phone calls a day from listeners needing to refinance, wanting to refinance, coming out of an economic tsunami with a foreclosure, a bankruptcy, wanting to get out of their rentals and into home ownership right now, get out of FHA loans and into other loans. It's still a great time. Rates are still historically low. Let's not freak out. Just calm the hell down.
But the chance of a rise in interest rates in December just went up quite a bit.
The interest rates rose from the election, what was it, Wednesday or Thursday night?
It was Tuesday night.
It was Tuesday night. Yeah. You know, just from Tuesday to today, we're up 3/8 to a half a point.
And
on
it
the
wasn't supposed to go up till December. They were holding on it, but it happened on its own.
That's the short-term interest rates, and that's the biggest misnomer that everybody's like, oh, the Fed's going to raise interest rates. Well, the bond market doesn't wait for the Fed to do what they do. The guys and gals at the bond market trade bonds every single day, okay, and they base it off the certainty or uncertainty what's happening in the economy or in the world market, okay? When Brexit happened, the bond market crashed because nobody knew what the heck was going to happen with Britain leaving the EU, right? Yeah. And you know, so the market crashed. It was a great rally for all the mortgage originators out there because we basically put a ton of loans through because market dropped. But listen, who knows what's going to happen, right? We have President-elect Trump. We have outgoing President Obama. Let's play it out, right? You know, this is the hand we're dealt. We got 4 years of this. Work it out. Let's figure it out.
Because he's so unpredictable in every way.
Correct.
That will more than likely lead to incredible market fluctuation.
Volatility and instability until the first 100 days, typically, until we see what the emperor is wearing or whatever that saying is. You know, I got an 18 on my ACT. I don't know all the sayings. But, you know, whatever. You know, the first 100 days, we'll see what it is. And if there's, listen, there's a whole bunch of things could happen, right? God forbid a terrorist attack. God forbid something happens. It impacts the market immediately.
Yeah.
Okay. Just like we saw Dow futures were down 700 points.
Right.
Initially.
Initially,
I was watching MSNBC, and all of a sudden they throw up their Dow futures down 700 points. That's when I started emailing my guys, hey, Dow futures are down 700 points. Bonds are going to rally. You know, let's get on the let's get ready for tomorrow so
let's
we can help our clients.
Let's get on the schnitzel.
Let's get on the schnitzel, America. I don't care. No sleeping tonight. Let's get ready. And then, boom, the market opened up a quarter of a point higher the next day. So you never know. You know, it is what it is. We're still taking phone calls. We're informing people what's happening with the market. And, like I said, the sun will come up. Everything will be fine.
Thank you, Annie. The
no
sun
problem.
Will come out tomorrow.
You don't want me to sing that?
David Hochberg from Pearl Mortgage, P-E-R-L.
Yes.
And how do people get in touch with you? And then we have more questions
yes,
for you.
Yes, it's very simple. You go to the website, wgndavid.com. That's the easiest way to go. Or you could call 312-751-1333. There's somebody to answer your phone call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You know, again, a lot of people are like, field a ton of calls. What does this mean? What does it mean? It means that the guys and gals at the bond market are going to trade bonds, and whatever the yields are, and we play it out. You know, you want to buy a house, you're probably looking in the high threes, low fours today, and that's the rate. You know, you want the 30-year fix at 3.5. It's not there anymore. Okay.
But if you're thinking about buying a house and you're going to wait to see if things get better, would it be smart to strike now?
Well, here, most every lender has a free float down policy where if the market gets dramatically better beyond like a quarter of a point from what you locked it in, there's a free renegotiation.
Yeah.
Because that lender doesn't want to lose that loan.
Is there a time limit on that or not?
Up until the time you close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
once you close, yeah.
Well, once you close and then everybody will be hounding you to refinance and then we get early payoffs, which is great because we have to give our commissions back because everybody's refinancing out of the loans because you have to be in a loan a certain period of time or the bank comes back and takes the fee that you earned on doing that loan. Oh. And it's just a casual.
Thanks, Mr. Potter, for that.
It is what it is. It's no big deal. Okay. Everybody gets hit with one or two of them. But here, all I could say is I know you want to go into a break, is that if you're looking to buy a home, we're still at historical lows. From when my parents went to buy a home, it was 18%, and you had three choices. 1 point in the steak knives, 1 point and the glassware, 1 point and the stemware. Okay, 18%. It was crazy back in the 70s, late 70s, when people were buying a home. We're talking about rates in the fours today.
I think we bought our home like 18 years ago, and I could swear it was like 8 or 9.
Yeah. So we're half of what you were in when you first got in your loans. I mean, you're still talking to people in that have 5-6% loans that are still calling us to get us out of 5-6% loans. Have I missed it? No. No, I'm talking to a couple right now who crossed over the foreclosure threshold of 7 years and now qualify for a Fannie Mae Freddie Mac loan. We're getting them out of a FHA loan into a conventional loan at the same exact rate, and we're saving them $186 a month because we're getting them out of PMI. Okay, that's some serious money, folks. Even though you're not dropping down an interest rate, you're saving $180 a month. You're going to pass that up. That's $2,000. A year. It's a lot of money.
It is, isn't it?
It's a lot of money.
The excitable boy, David Hochberg, is here. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. He will field those calls and questions. Next, stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, he's the excitable boy. He's David Hochberg. He's from Pearl Mortgage. That's P-E-R-L. David, how do people reach you?
P-E-R-L, you just go to WGN. David is the easiest way. And I want a special thanks to all of the WGN listeners. We raised money to give Sergio Lopez a brand new Camaro. And we raised over $13,000 with the help of all the WGN listeners. We had him on Cochran Show last Thursday. We presented him the car. And
Sergio Lopez is?
A Iraqi war veteran who lost both his legs when his Humvee drove over a improvised explosive device in 2006 on his 10th day of on his second tour. On the 10th day of his second tour, he was driving a Humvee and IED blew up underneath his car, underneath his Humvee, and severely damaged his lower extremities. And when they shipped him home, and he decided to lose both his legs, amputate both his legs, and now he has two prosthetic legs. And the Associated Firefighters of Illinois came to me and asked me to sponsor their car giveaway to a veteran, and I got to know Sergio, and I put up $5,000 as the match, and thank God we blew through that $5,000. So with my $5,000, we raised over $18,000 for the cost of the car.
Nice of you to do that.
Well,
thank you. That's great.
It's the least that we could do. And we had a big ceremony out on Michigan Avenue. Chicago firefighters sent
awesome,
over
David.
Engine 98 over off of Michigan Avenue, and it was great. NBC5, Lauren Petty did a great story.
Oh, nice.
So you could go to NBC5 to check it out.
Very, very nice.
Great work. You always give back. You really do.
Every loan we give back, and everybody that closes a loan with Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage also receives one person in each household, a shirt. I enter them into a 6-month trial membership of Rags of Honor. Mark Doyle's, he hires homeless veterans, and I pay for a 6-month trial as a thank you, so to bring awareness to Mark's company and Mark's organization. So hopefully people will go to him to get birthday presents or holiday presents or to continue on the 6-month program. It helps hire homeless veterans, and Mark pays them a livable wage and helps them find housing. So every loan that closes, we're giving back to a homeless
veteran.
Very
nice.
Which is important to me.
Great work. A couple of calls. Let's see how great you are answering these very quickly.
Bring it on, baby.
This is David. 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 David.
Great name.
How you doing, Billy Wendy?
Good. What's your question?
How you doing, Mr. Hochberg? So my question is this: about a year ago, December 15th to be exact, we declared bankruptcy. We rent an apartment, and I was just wondering how soon before we could actually start looking to get into a home. To purchase a home, can we do that? And is there any programs out there for people like us?
Yes. Was it a Chapter 7 or a 13?
I believe it was the...
You did a complete credit blowout? You did a blowout?
Right. Just a complete credit clear. Correct.
All right. So you did a Chapter 7. Are you a veteran?
No, sir.
Okay. Because veterans could get in, I believe, 1 year after a Chapter 7, or is it two? I think it's 2 years after 7. Here, if you're a veteran, you could get a mortgage after 2 years after Chapter 7. You could also get a FHA loan 2 years after a Chapter 7. Okay, so you got to wait 24 months.
Non-veteran, though. He's not a veteran.
Well, it's two years to get an FHA loan. It's 1 year with the Chapter 13. It's 2 years with the Chapter 7. What I strongly recommend that you do, you're coming up to your 1 year anniversary. There's a bunch of different programs that we have through First Midwest Bank, who is a great source for credit enhancement products that we heavily promote. So what I recommend you do, David, is just give me a call or go to WGNDavid.com. Send me an email, and if you call me Mr. Hochberg, it's going to go to my father. just call me David. Say, you just talk to me on the radio, and we will hook you up with our team of ladies over at First Midwest Bank who have phenomenal products that will enable you to enhance your credit so your credit score is as high as you could get it to get the lowest rate on an FHA loan 12 months from this December, which will be 2 years from your discharge date. Okay, bud?
Okay. Thank you very much, Dave. Right, appreciate
no problem.
It.
Good luck.
You got guys like that, right, who don't care about rates, right? Rates, he obviously cares about rates. It's important to him, but he's more interested in getting in position right now to see what he could do next December.
Sure.
And who the hell knows what rates are going to be next December. But you know what? When rates go up, they come down, and then we just refinance people.
All right. You have 1 minute. Frank, David Hochberg.
Go, Frank.
Hi, David.
Hey, bud.
My question is, my girlfriend's purchasing at home, and the bank is trying to convince her to make a biweekly payment instead of a monthly payment on her mortgage.
Yeah.
Why would they do that?
Well, because they pay off the loan, you know, 7 years faster. Are they trying to charge her for that service, Frank?
Not that I know of, but would it be the same because of a biweekly payment, you would be making 26
right.
payments annually?
You're making an extra mortgage payment a year. Here's what I would do, okay?
It's two extra payments because on a biweekly you have 26 payments, and on a regular mortgage you're making 12.
Right, 12, 26 divided by 2 is 13, so you're making one extra payment a year. Okay, so here's what I would do, okay? I don't like being tied into these fecoctic things. I would just tell her to do this. Take her mortgage payment, principal and interest payment, divide it by 12, and send in that extra every single payment. That way she controls the back off if she has an economic calamity like a family event or a job loss or some type of, you know, economic problem, challenge that she has to back off the payment. You could accomplish the same thing by just sending in 112 extra.
Is there a difference in daily interest, or is it all calculated with a formula?
It basically all comes out the same, Frank. You're basically making an extra mortgage payment. 26 divided by 12 is 13 payments, right? So she's making 13 payments a year instead of 12. It's an extra mortgage payment. They like to package it up into a little blue box, and then charge you a ton of money because they're putting it in a little blue box. You know what I'm saying? So don't pay for the little blue box. Take the principal and interest payment, divide it by 12. Tell your girlfriend to just send in an extra payment every single month with her mortgage payment that she controls, not the bank. So in case something happens, instead of jacking up $20,000 with the credit card debt like we always see, she could take the extra money and apply it towards the credit card debt when she needs to and pay the mortgage when she has the money available. That's what I would tell her to do.
Thank you, Dave.
And, of course,
continue to date you, Frank,
at least through the end of the year.
And don't you have to somehow, I don't understand this, but I had a financial guy on once with me who said, and you have to put a notation there
right.
that says this goes to the
apply
principal.
Apply the extra money to the principal.
Exactly. Right, that's important.
Yeah,
that
it's kind of, some banks will let you do it. Other banks, you have to specify, please apply this extra $100, $200, $158 to the principal.
Where else would it go if it wasn't the principal?
Well, sometimes they hold it until the next payment comes through.
Oh,
and
okay.
You got to take a break because we're getting the finger.
All right. All right.
I'm giving you the
we're
finger,
We're getting
yes.
a roundabout finger, not
but
the finger. Like, hey, dummy, speed it up. Let's go. We got a break.
This is why I totally trust you, because you have the answer to everything and you help people. So, David Hochberg, if you need assistance on refi or mortgage or any other questions, again, how do they reach you?
It's very simple. WGNDavid.com. Go to, or you can call me, 312-751-1333. There's somebody there to answer the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Thank you, David. You are the human we'll be.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We'll take a quick break.
All right. Never later.
A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Steve.
I like this song, Casey and the Sunshine Band. It's a time in my life where all you worried about was who was having the party. A high school party. That's it.
Sure.
Times were much simpler back then.
Yeah, and if you go to a high school party now, everyone looks at you like, why are you here?
Michael, your mom's here again.
Right.
Could you kick her out? She's drinking all the beer.
Well, then I explain. I brought KO. Who wants a KO, an ice cold KO?
All right, things we're going to discuss. President Barack Obama is scheduled to speak in the next 5 minutes or so. Is that correct, Steve?
Well, he's got a news conference scheduled, and we expect it to start around 2:15 or so.
Ballpark figure.
And the topic, Steve, do we know what he's addressing?
Well, he's traveling overseas. He's leaving on a trip, so it's not unusual they would have one then, but it will be dominated by the election, I'm sure.
Sure. All right.
We're also going to be talking to someone from the Adler Planetarium because the moon is huge.
Supermoon, Wendy. It's a supermoon.
But here's where I'm confused, and that's why we're going to talk to Larry Chupik, an astronomer at the Adler.
Mm-hmm.
Was he your first choice?
Yes.
Lucianne Walkowitz is unavailable. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. I just wondered.
The sexy scientist?
We'll have her on again.
I'm good with Larry, quite honestly, because he's sexy in my book.
Yeah.
No one reads my book, though.
Right.
All right. Well, last night, my boys said, hey, you got to come outside and see the super moon. So I went outside. I looked at it over the neighbor's house. It was brighter than I've honestly noticed it.
Yeah. Super moon.
But it I don't think it hit supermoon status last night, so I prematurely looked at a supermoon. It wasn't so super last night. That's what I have to get to the bottom of.
Well, last night was a dress rehearsal. Tonight, when you see the supermoon, you will notice in a minute how super it is.
Did you see it last night?
No.
It was honestly afraid. Brighter than I've ever seen.
Was it? Yeah.
Well, it's not the brightness, it's the size.
Right.
Well, it's both. I thought it was supposed to be like 16% brighter. And size-wise, I mean, you've seen, the moon is a very weird thing. Can I tell you that?
How so? Why do you say that?
Because sometimes you look in the sky and you see that harvest moon, which is like humongous and orange.
Right.
And you've seen that, correct?
Yeah, I've seen the harvest moon, sure.
And then like 20 minutes later, it's up a little higher and it's a normal moon.
You know why that is?
No.
Because it's up a little higher.
It is, yeah.
Because it's
really
a relative
is.
Thing. It does. It's the same size in your. It's the same size, even if you were to measure it, but you have less to measure it against. So when it comes up next to a tree, it looks bigger.
But it's like so quickly it goes back into regular moon phase. It's not the giant
is
harvest
it within
moon.
Minutes? Does it? It doesn't.
It's not
change
in minutes, but it's pretty quickly. You see this big giant orange thing, and you're like, "What is that? Oh, it's just the moon." And
it's
then
the president elect.
Are we seeing it as orange because of the sun's reflection upon it? Is that why? It doesn't really change colors.
Well,
it's
the
not
harvest
a mood moon.
Is...
Well, those are the bounce light rays coming off the Earth.
And is that what it is?
Secret little astronomer here.
I really don't
astronomer.
Know.
I believe you could be right, and it is a harvest moon is different than the super moon.
Right. Or the desert moon, which is what you see if you go to Dennis DeYoung's house and observe it.
Why do everybody sings about the moon?
It's a very popular it's very popular in song, isn't it?
It was really funny. Someone on Facebook, I don't know who it was, posted last night that they could see Audrey Meadows in the moon night. It was so big.
Whoever that person is, genius.
I know. I knew you'd be proud. We're going to take a quick break and get things under control in case President Barack Obama speaks to us about the transition, which... another person put up on Facebook when you have Donald Trump and President Barack Obama sitting there in the White House, and somebody, the caption is, it looks like they're waiting for their wives to try something on at Lord and Taylor. And it really, truly did. The guy chair that everybody sits in when they're waiting for their wife to try something on.
There's a little video clip that's been going around of that day. And it's Barack Obama, you know, the term polite smile, where the person doesn't want to smile, but you go, this is the, if I'm going to smile, I got to do it now. So there's that moment. And I don't know what was said at the time, but you see Barack Obama just kind of looking at him, and then the worst polite smile in the history of polite smiling. And then it was just back to normal. But it only lasts 2 seconds, but you just go, yeah, that's what you got to do. It's just, yeah, I had the job, then you'll have the job. All right.
Barack has offered to help as much as he's needed, and I don't know if you saw the 60 Minutes thing or heard it. I was taking a shower, so I was listening on the radio, and he was asked, Donald Trump was asked, if are you embarrassed going to see President Barack Obama with what was said between you guys?
Good question.
And he's like, Steve, do you have any of that audio, or do you remember what he said? Because it was kind of like, I'm not embarrassed. I mean, you know, things were said, and he said them too. It's not... I think he was, you know, more embarrassed than I was. I think that's what he had said.
Yeah, he said he wasn't embarrassed by it, and that, you know, it was the heat of the battle, and the battle was over.
And there is a different Trump now since the...
Not complete. I mean, there is and there isn't, because he's still tweeting odd things. Like,
yeah, I noticed that.
Tweeting about the New York Times losing subscribers by the thousands.
Yeah.
And the New York Times says, no, we've actually increased, and... So it's just odd. It's in tennis, right, Bill? That's such an unforced error.
It is exactly.
No one was
that.
Asking you about that, and why you would
why bring it up,
make that up. I don't know.
But. Yeah,
that Twitter thing is going to be really bad for him. It really is.
It's like the there are apps you can buy for drunk texting. You know that there's a delay on it.
Yes,
he needs like a Twitter staffer, I think.
I mean, you got to be so careful because. It's instant and everybody sees it.
In the past, whoever's had that job has not really given in to that world.
Barack Obama was POTUS. He's on Twitter.
But has he, like, if anybody's criticized him, because he's had plenty of criticism over 8 years, Does he go for the jugular?
He doesn't get sucked into it.
That's what I mean.
Ignore the trolls.
You would think somebody who's reached that position of presidency would realize I'm better served to not address all those. But he so far not. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. Barack Obama
before
scheduled
we
to
do
speak.
That, I'm yes? just getting just got an email from the NFL that Alshon Jeffrey has been suspended for 4 games for a violation of. Let me just read it to you. Alshon right. Jeffrey of the Chicago Bears suspended without pay for the team's next 4 games for violating the NFL policy on performance-enhancing substances.
Uh-oh.
That's not good.
Suspension begins immediately. He will be eligible to return to the active roster on Monday, December 12th.
Like it matters.
After the 11th game against the Detroit Lions, at which point the Bears will be 1-82.
Can't we just hang a little sign on Hallis Hall that says gone fishing? And just close up shop for the season.
This would be the time. It would. All right, a break, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com.
Barack Obama will be speaking soon. We're guessing about the Alshon Jeffrey situation, right? He's got to talk about it.
Right now, if you're a Chicago Bear, don't you just go run out in front of some defensive tackle and hope your leg breaks so you can sit on the bench and not play for the rest
Maybe.
Of the season and
Maybe.
Still get paid?
Without a doubt, the Bears need to enhance their performance. And he is. there's no question
at
about that.
At least he's trying.
Right. He's the one
he
guy
gets
the Bears.
An A for effort. Oh, Bill, that's so funny.
He figured it out. He said, look, I know this is a weird route to take, but at least I will enhance my performance. So a 4-game suspension is what Steve just told us moments ago. And there goes our Super Bowl chances.
There goes. I mean, really, I just, again, I mentioned earlier, I'm embarrassed for the Bears. I know they're embarrassed for themselves. Again, just put a little sign that says gone fishing.
It was so strange in the waning moments of the game to hear the announcers doing the game talk about how the Bears at this point need to make a decision as to whether or not Jay Cutler is their guy going forward. Because you say to yourself, look, you guys only do the Bears games once in a while, but here in Chicago we're subjected to them on a weekly basis. The fast answer to your query is no, he's not the guy to take us forward. If we want to go backwards, he's the guy that can take us backwards.
Quarterback, was it one of the players playing against the Bears yesterday talked about growing up watching Jay Cutler for the Bears.
Oh, wow. Really?
And it's been a long time.
Wow.
One other story. We're standing by waiting for President Obama to talk. He has got a news conference scheduled, and certainly we'll have a lot of questions presented to him. It will be about the election and the transition. Also from Cobb County, Georgia, the father there who was charged with leaving his son in a hot car to die has been found guilty now on several murder counts. So that verdict just in, the jury, I think, had deliberated the case a couple of days.
What a horrible story.
Yeah, prosecutors argued that he did it intentionally. They say he'd been living a double life and wanted to escape his family to be the other Justin Ross Harris, the other Ross Harris.
Awful. Awful.
That is terrible.
I don't know that we have time for this. Can we start this, and then if Barack Obama is speaking, we'll certainly put it on hold and get to this later. There's a story about an Army veteran, a man named Ernest Walker. Apparently Chili's, the restaurant chain Chili's, had a deal going on Veterans Day on Friday where if you provide them with information, they would give you some food for free. It was their way of doing a good deed
for
the community. Yeah, for vets. So there's a guy named Ernest Walker who comes in and is taking advantage of this. And then another customer decided that they believed that Ernie Walker was not a Vietnam or not a war vet, that he was just trying to scam free food. And the manager of the Chili's promptly came and had an exchange with him explaining that the food was not going to be for him, that he was taking the food away. Now, the end of the story, because I don't want to lose the end. Chili's is very upset about this manager who confronted him and took the food
as
away.
They should be.
And they're going through steps to have him fired. I don't understand why they've done this, but they've gone on their Facebook page. Chili's has a Facebook page, and they've expressed concern and said that we're going to take some measures to get him removed. I would think if you're Chili's, it's a very easy process of just explaining to him, you're making
fired.
Us all look bad, you're fired. But can we play, Kevin? Do we have a little bit of the audio? This is from Friday on Veterans Day when Ernest Walker was dining in a Chili's and was confronted by the manager after a customer complained and suggested that he was not a vet and didn't deserve any free food. Listen to this.
Question my service dog? You're questioning my service dog now. Okay. Now you do.
So he was questioning the meal and his service dog? He had a service dog with him?
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just ask why on earth another patron would say anything else? Why don't you just mind your own business?
I can't figure that
out. If someone's scamming, maybe they need to scam. Maybe he's hungry. I mean, mind your own business.
I can't figure that part either. Here's more of the audio. Listen.
Questioning my service dog? You're questioning my service dog now. Now, you do know it's against the law, against HIPAA regulations for you to question my service dog. Do you want to read? Do you want to read my service dog? Now, you question my military service, and you question my service dog, and I've got, is this a certified dog?
Sir.
Is this a certified dog?
Sir.
Is this a certified dog, sir? No, I'm asking you a question.
Sir.
Is this a certified dog?
Sir.
Did you see my military information?
Sir.
No, yes or no, first of all?
I am not answering any of your questions. Because
no, did you? Did you see my military information?
Sir.
Did you see my military information?
Sir.
Did you see my military? No, I'll leave as soon as you ask my two questions.
The answer is no, I'm not answering your questions.
Okay. Did you see my military service? Did you see my military service?
Sir, no. There.
Yes, you did. Oh, so that's a lie, but you already said you did.
It goes on like that for quite a while. A U.S. Army vet, Ernest Walker, started recording a video when a manager, that's the other voice you heard in the background, at a Chili's restaurant located in Cedar Hill, Texas, questioned his military service and then promptly took away his food. Soon after, Ernest Walker said that the restaurant's manager approached him and said that a fellow customer said that Walker was not a real soldier because he had his hat on indoors. So that's what led him to believe this couldn't be a legitimate soldier. He was dining indoors with his hat on. He asked to see identification, the manager did, and continued to question Walker. Eventually, he took his food away, even though Walker showed him his military ID and his discharge paperwork.
How could he do
that? Walker, I don't know. Walker posted the video, the one you just heard. You heard the audio portion, which has been viewed more than 50,000 times, according to Facebook, over the weekend. He wrote that the incident made him feel grossly offended, embarrassed, and dehumanized. On Friday, protesters organized outside of the Chili's restaurant, to support Walker. Chili's responded to critics, calling for the manager to be fired on Facebook. This is the part that I'm unsure of. Just fire him. Don't go to Facebook and say, we're trying to fire him. Fire him. The restaurant chain said it elevated the situation to the highest levels of the company and then fell short on its goal to make every guest feel special. That part's addressing the fact that they wanted to have a special deal for vets and provide them with food and make everybody feel good.
And then take their food away from them?
And then take their food away, yes. The company also apologized in a prepared statement and said that it was reaching out to Walker. But Walker told the Dallas Morning News that as of Sunday, Chili's had not apologized directly to him. He said that he felt the election has changed the hearts of people. I do believe that the election has changed the hearts and changed the motives of people so much so that he believed in his heart and mind after talking to the Trump supporter that I was stealing food. The other person who turned him in had on a shirt that mentioned Donald Trump. The reason he's bringing Trump into this, and this is just an extra sidebar to the whole thing, but the one who came in and said, I don't think that guy belongs in here, he's got his hat on. That guy had a Trump T-shirt on, so that's why he's brought Trump into the argument there.
Shame on the manager for listening to him, because seriously, the manager could have just said, well, thanks for your concern,
right, sir,
no big deal.
Right.
If he's lying, he's lying, but whatever, it's Veterans Day.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this guy should be fired. Like, should have already been fired.
I'm shocked. I don't know what's holding that.
We can't contact him, so we can't fire him.
Right.
We'll fire him.
Right.
Give us his number. We'll leave a message.
Ironically, the guy who's famous for the phrase, you're fired, has a tie in the story. I don't know how it happened, but it happened. All right, we'll take a quick break. Barack Obama is scheduled to speak momentarily. So when we come back, either we'll get some news from Steve or we'll get his words. We're not sure which one yet.
Can we give something away,
yeah,
whether you're a veteran or not?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have a gift certificate for Baker Square, the best pie in America. I like pie. This Thanksgiving, bring award-winning pumpkin pies.
Could you warn us the next time you're going to do that? Just
that
like a 5 second.
That was half Cartman from South Park and half the devil. Sorry about
that. Say I like pie again and then follow that up with red rum. Let me hear those together.
This Thanksgiving, bring award-winning pumpkin pies and velvety French silk pie. Order your pie today at bakersquare.com. But if you want a free pie from us, give us a call right now, 312-981-7200. Caller number 11. All right?
Yes.
All right.
All right, call now. Be caller 11.
Bye.
But where's the warning? All right, a quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. I want to remind all of you, we were going to talk to an astronomer from the Adler Planetarium, Larry Chupik, but he was bumped because of the president, and that's okay.
So we will give everybody his home phone number, and you can call him and find out what you need to know about the supermoon.
I'll tell you what you need to know. The full moon is bigger and brighter, Steve, than it's been in decades, and NASA scientists say the moon is brighter than it has appeared in any point in the last 68 years. You will not see another supermoon like this until 2034. So make sure you get a look at it later on tonight.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be bigger, brighter. Why don't you shoot the moon to the supermoon?
I plan on doing that. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll find out where Rowan Anna have for you next. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.